into staying. There's a touch of Desdemar in this. Avienda hesitated. You seem proud. Yet I gather this letter is only one step away from being insulting. I am proud, Elaine said, and angry at him, but proud because he knew to make me angry like that. Light. We'll make a king out of you yet, Rand. Why does he want me at the meeting so badly? Does he think I'll support his side just because of my affection for him? You don't know what his plan is, then? No. It obviously involves all of the rulers. But I will attend, even though I'm likely to do so without having had any sleep tonight. I am meeting with Birgitta and my other commanders in an hour to go over plans for drawing out, then destroying the Trollocs. A fire still burned behind those eyes of hers. Elaine was a warrior, as true a one as Avienda had ever known. I must go to him, Avienda said. Tonight? Tonight. The last battle will soon begin. As far as I'm concerned, it started the moment those bloody Trollocs set foot in Camelon, Elaine said. May the light favor us. It is here. Then the day of dying will come, Avienda said. Many of us will soon wake from this dream. There may not be another night for Rand and myself. I came to you in part to ask you about this. You have my blessing, Elaine said softly. You are my first sister. Have you spent time with Min? Not enough, and under other circumstances I would remedy that lack immediately. There is no time. Elaine nodded. I do think she feels better about me, Avienda said. She did me a great honor in helping me understand the last step to becoming a wise one. It may be appropriate to bend some of the customs. We have done well under the circumstances. I would speak to her together with you, if there is time. Elaine nodded. I can spare a moment or two between meetings. I'll send for her.
Chapter 3. A Dangerous Place. Lord Loghain and Taim have indeed patched up their differences, Welland said, sitting inside the common room of the great gathering. He wore bells in his dark braids, and he smiled widely. He always had smiled too much. Both were worried about the division we've been suffering and agree it isn't good for morale. We need to be focused on the last battle. This isn't a time for squabbling. Andral stood just inside the door, Vivara beside him. It was surprising how quickly this building, a former warehouse, had been transformed into a tavern. Lind had done her work well. There were a respectable bar and stools, and though the tables and chairs spread through the room didn't match yet, the place could seat dozens. She also had a library with a considerable number of books, although she was very particular about who she allowed to use it. On the second floor, she planned private dining chambers and sleeping rooms for visitors to the Black Tower, assuming Taim started letting visitors in again. The room was quite packed, and the crowd included a large number of newer recruits, men who didn't yet fall on either side of the growing dispute, either with Taim and his men, or with those loyal to Loghain. Andral listened to Welland, feeling chilled. Welland's Aes Sedai, Jannera, sat beside him, hand resting fondly on his arm. Andral didn't know her well, but he did know Welland. And this thing with Welland's face and voice was not the same man.
"We met with the Lord Dragon," Welland continued, "surveying the borderlands, preparing for humankind's assault against the Shadow. He has rallied the armies of all nations to his banner. There are none who do not support him. Other than the Shanshan, of course, but they have been driven back. This is the time, and we will soon be called upon to strike. We need to focus one last time on our skills. The sword and dragon will be awarded liberally in the next 2 weeks. Work hard, and we will be the weapons that break the Dark One's hold upon this land."
You say Loghain is coming, a voice demanded. Why isn't he back yet?
Andral turned. Jonath Dautry stood near Welland's table. With his arms folded, glowering at Welland, Jonath was an intimidating sight. The Two Rivers man often had a friendly way about him, and it was easy to forget that he stood a head taller than you and had arms like those of a bear. He wore his black Ashaman coat, though it had no pins on the high collar, despite the fact that he was as strong in the One Power as any dedicated.
"Why isn't he here?" Jonas demanded. "You said that you returned with him, that he and Taim have spoken. Well, where is he?"
"Don't push, lad," Andral thought. "Let him think we believe his lies."
"He took the Mahale to visit the Lord Dragon," Welland said. "Both should be back on the morrow, the day after at the latest." "Why did Taim need Loghain to show him the way?" Jonath said stubbornly. "He could have gone on his own."
"That boy is a fool," Vibara hissed. "He's honest," Andral replied quietly, "and he wants honest answers."
These Two Rivers lads were a good lot, straightforward and loyal. They weren't particularly practiced in subterfuge, however. Vibara fell silent, but Andral could feel her as she considered channeling and hushing Jonath with some bindings of air. They weren't serious thoughts, just idle fancies, but Andral could sense them.
Light, what had they done to each other? "She's in my head," he thought. "There's an Aes Sedai inside my head."
Vibara froze, then glanced at him. Andral sought the void, that old soldier's trick to help him see clarity before a battle. Sayadin was there too, of course. He didn't reach for it.
"What did you do?" Vibara whispered. "I can feel you there, but sensing your thoughts is harder."
"Well, that was something at least."
"Jonath!"
Lind called across the common room, interrupting the lad's next question to Welland.
"Didn't you hear the man saying how much traveling he's been doing? He's exhausted. Let him drink his ale and rest a spell before you pry stories out of him."
Jonath glanced at her, looking hurt. Welland smiled deeply as the lad withdrew, pushing his way out of the common room. Welland continued talking about how well the Lord Dragon was doing, and about how much each of them would be needed. Andral released the void, feeling more relaxed. He looked around the room, trying to judge who in here he could rely upon. He liked many of these men, and many weren't completely for Taim, yet he still couldn't trust them. Taim had complete control of the tower now, and private lessons with him and his chosen were coveted by the newcomers. Only the Two Rivers lads could be counted on to give any sort of support to Andral's cause, and most of them, other than Jonath, were too unpracticed to be of use. Evan had joined Nalam on the other side of the room, and Andral nodded his head to him, sending him out to follow Jonath into the storm. Nobody was to be alone. That done, Andral listened to Welland's boasting and noticed Lind picking her way through the crowd toward him. Lind Taglian was a short, dark-haired woman. Her dress was covered in lovely embroidery. She had always seemed to him a model of what the Black Tower could be. Civilized, educated, important. Men made way for her. They knew not to spill their drinks or start fights in her inn. Lind's anger was not something a wise man ever wanted to know. It was a good thing she ran the place so tightly. In a city full of male channelers, a simple tavern brawl could potentially go very, very wrong.
"Does this bother you as much as it does me?" Lind asked softly as she stepped up beside him. "Wasn't he the one who just a few weeks back was talking about how Taim should be tried and executed for some of the things he'd done?"
Andral didn't reply. What could he say? That he suspected that the man they'd known as Welland was dead? That the entire Black Tower would soon be nothing but these monsters with the wrong eyes, the false smiles, the dead souls?
"I don't believe him about Loghain," Lind said. "Something's going on here, Andral. I'm going to have Frask follow him tonight. See where he—"
"No," Andral said. "No, don't."
Frask was her husband, a man who had been hired to help Henry Haslin teach swordsmanship in the Black Tower. Taim thought that sword fighting was useless for Ashaman, but the Lord Dragon had insisted that the men be taught. She eyed him.
You're not saying you believe.
I'm saying that we're in great danger right now, Lind, and I don't want Frask making it worse. Do me a favor. Take note of what Elswellen says tonight. Maybe some of it will be useful for me to know.
All right, she said, sounding skeptical.
Andril nodded toward Nalam and Candler, who rose and headed over. Rain beat against the rooftop and the porch outside. Wellen kept right on talking, and the men were listening. Yes, it was incredible that he'd swapped sides so quickly, and that would make some suspicious. But many people respected him, and the way he was off just slightly wasn't noticeable unless you knew him.
Lind, Andril said as she started to walk away. She glanced back at him. You lock this place up tightly tonight. Then maybe you and Frask should find your way into the cellar with some supplies, all right? You have a sturdy cellar door?
Yes, she said, for all the good it will do. It wouldn't matter how thick a door was if someone with the one power came looking. Nalam and Candler reached them, and Andril turned to go, only to run directly into a man standing in the doorway behind him, someone he hadn't heard approach. Rain dripped from his Ashaman coat, with the sword and the dragon on the high collar. Etal Mishrail had been one of Taim's from the start. He didn't have the hollow eyes. His evil was all his own. Tall, with long golden hair, he had a smile that never seemed to reach his eyes. Bivara jumped when she saw him, and Nalam cursed, seizing the one power.
Now, now, a voice said. No need for strife.
Mesar stepped in from the rain beside Mishrail. The short Damani man had graying hair and an air of wisdom to him despite his transformation. Andril met Mesar's eyes, and it was like looking into a deep cavern, a place where light had never shone.
Hello, Andril, Mesar said, putting a hand on Mishrail's shoulder, as if the two had been friends for a long time. Why is it that good woman Lind would need to fear and shut herself in her cellar? Surely the Black Tower is as safe a place as there is?
I don't trust a dark night full of storms, Andril said.
Perhaps that is wise, Mesar replied. Yet you go out into it. Why not stay where it is warm? Nalam, I should like to hear one of your stories. Perhaps you could tell me one of the time your father and you visited Shara?
It's not that good a story, Nalam said. I don't know if I remember it that well.
Mesar laughed, and Andril heard Wellen stand up behind him.
Ah, there you are. I was telling them you'd talk about defenses in Arafel.
Come listen, Mesar said. This will be important for the last battle.
Maybe I'll return, Andril said, voice cool. Once my other work is done.
The two stared at one another. To the side, Nalam still held the one power. He was as strong as Mesar, but would never be able to face both him and Mishrail, particularly not in a room crammed with people who would probably take the side of the two full Ashaman.
Don't waste your time with the page boy, Wellen, Kotaran said from behind.
Mishrail stepped aside to make room for this third newcomer. The bulky, beady-eyed man pressed a hand against Andril's chest and shoved him aside as he passed.
Oh, wait. You can't play page boy anymore, can you?
Andril entered the void and seized the source. Shadows immediately started moving in the room, lengthening. There weren't enough lights. Why didn't they light more lamps? The darkness invited those shadows in, and he could see them. These were real, each one a tendril of blackness reaching for him, to pull him into them, to destroy him.
Oh, light, I'm mad.
The void shattered, and the shadows, thankfully, retreated. He found himself shaking, pulling back against the wall, panting. Ibarra watched him with an expressionless face, but he could feel her concern.
"Oh, by the way,"
Paterin said. He was one of Taim's most influential toadies.
"Have you heard?"
"Heard what?" Andrel managed to force out.
"You've been demoted, page boy,"
Paterin said, pointing toward the sword pin.
"Taim's orders. As of today. Back to soldier you go, Andrel."
"Oh, yes," Welland called from the center of the room. "I'm sorry I forgot to mention it. It has been cleared with the Lord Dragon, I'm afraid. You never should have been promoted, Andrel. Sorry."
Andrel reached to his neck, to the pin there. It shouldn't matter to him. What did it really mean? But it did matter. He'd spent his entire life searching. He'd apprenticed to a dozen different professions. He'd fought in revolts, sailed two seas, all the while searching. Searching for something he hadn't been able to define. He'd found it when he'd come to the Black Tower. He pushed through the fear. Shadows be burned. He seized Sayadin again, the power flooding him. He straightened up, going eye to eye with Koterin. The larger man smiled and seized the one power as well. Mezar joined him, and in the middle of the room Welland stood. Nalam was whispering to himself in worry, eyes darting back and forth. Candler seized Sayadin and looked resigned. Everything Andrel could hold, all of the one power he could muster, flooded into him. It was minuscule compared to the others. He was the weakest man in the room. The newest of recruits could manage more than he could.
"Are you going to make a go of it, then?" Koterin asked softly. "I asked them to leave you because I knew you'd try it eventually. I wanted the satisfaction, page boy. Come on, strike. Let's see it."
Andrel reached out, trying to do the one thing he could do, form a gateway. To him, this was something beyond Weaves. It was just him and the power, something intimate, something instinctive. Trying to make a gateway now felt like trying to scramble up a 100-foot glass wall with only his fingernails to give him purchase. He leaped, scrambled, tried. Nothing happened. He felt so close. If he could just push a little harder, he could... The shadows lengthened. The panic rose in him again. Teeth gritted, Andrel reached to his collar and ripped the pin free. He dropped it on the floorboards before Koterin with a clink. Nobody in the room spoke. Then, burying his shame under a mountain of determination, he released the one power and pushed past Mezar into the night. Nalam, Candler, and Pavara followed with anxious steps. The rain washed over Andrel. He felt the loss of that pin as he might have felt the loss of a hand.
"Andrel," Nalam said. "I'm sorry."
Thunder rumbled. They splashed through muddy puddles on the unpaved street.
"It doesn't matter," Andrel said.
"Maybe we should have fought," Nalam said. "Some of the lads in there would have supported us. They're not all in his pocket. Once, Father and I, we fought down 6 Darkhands. Light upon my grave we did. If we survived that, we can deal with a few Ashaman dogs."
"We'd have been slaughtered," Andrel said.
"But
we'd have been slaughtered," Andrel said. "We don't let them pick the battlefield, Nalam."
"But there will be a battle?"
Candler asked, catching up to Andrel on the other side.
"They have Loghain," Andrel said. "They wouldn't make the promises they're making unless they did. Everything dies. Our rebellion, our chances at a unified Black Tower, if we lose him."
"So?"
"So we're going to rescue him," Andrel said, continuing forward. "Tonight."
Rand worked by the soft, steady light of a Sayadin globe. Before Dragonmount, he'd begun avoiding this kind of common use of the One Power. Seizing it had made him sick, and using it had revolted him more and more. That had changed. Sayadin was part of him, and he needed to fear it no longer, now that the taint was gone. More importantly, he had to stop thinking of it, and of himself, as merely a weapon. He would work by globes of light whenever he could. He intended to go to Flynn to learn healing. He had little skill in it, but a little skill could save the life of someone wounded. All too often Rand had used this wonder, this gift, only to destroy or kill. Was it any wonder that people looked upon him with fear? What would Tam say? I guess I could ask him, Rand thought idly as he made a notation to himself on a piece of paper. It was still hard to get used to the idea of Tam being there, just one camp over. Rand had dined with him earlier. It had been awkward, but no more so than expected for a king inviting his father from a rural village to dine. They had laughed about it, which made him feel much better. Rand had let Tam return to Perrin's camp rather than seeing him given honors and wealth. Tam didn't want to be hailed as the Dragon Reborn's father. He wanted to be what he'd always been. Tam Althor, a solid, dependable man by anyone's measure, but not a lord. Rand went back to the document in front of him. Clerks in Tyr had advised him on the proper language, but he had done the actual writing. He hadn't trusted any other hand, or any other eyes, with this document. Was he being too careful? What his enemies could not anticipate, they could not work against. He had grown too distrustful after Semirag had nearly captured him. He recognized this. However, he'd been holding secrets close to him for so long it was difficult to let them out. He started at the top of the document, rereading. Once, Tam had sent Rand to examine a fence for weak spots. Rand had done so, so when he'd returned, Tam had sent him out on the same duty again. It hadn't been until the third pass that Rand had found the loose post that needed replacing. He still didn't know if Tam had known about the post, or if his father had just been being his careful self. This document was far more important than a fence. Rand would look it over a dozen more times this night, searching for problems he had not foreseen. Unfortunately, it was hard to concentrate. The women were up to something. He could feel them through the bowls of emotion in the back of his mind. There were four of those. Alana was still there, somewhere to the north. The other three had been near to one another all night. Now they'd made their way almost to his tent. What were they up to? Wait. One of them had split off from the others. She was nearly here. Abienda? Rand stood up, walking to the front of his tent and throwing back the flaps. She froze in place, just outside, as if she'd been intending to sneak into his tent. She raised her chin, meeting his eyes. Suddenly, shouts rose in the night. For the first time, he noticed that his guards were not in attendance. However, the maidens made camp near his tent, and they appeared to be shouting at him. Not with joy, as he'd expected. Insults. Terrible ones. Several were screaming about what they do to certain parts of his body when they caught him. "What is this?" he murmured. "They don't mean it," Abienda said. "It is a symbol to them of you taking me away from their ranks. But I have already left their ranks to join the Wise Ones. It is a thing of the maidens. It is actually a sign of respect. If they did not like you, they would not act this way."
Aiel.
"Wait," he said. "How have I taken you from them?" Abienda looked him in the eyes, but color rose in her cheeks. Abienda? Blushing? This was unexpected. "You should understand already," she said, "if you'd paid attention to what I told you about us. Unfortunately, you had a complete woolhead of a student. It is fortunate for him that I have decided to extend my training." She took a step closer. "There are many things I still need to teach." Her blush deepened. "Light. She was beautiful. but so was Elaine, and so was Min, and... He was a fool. A light-blinded fool.
Abienda, he said, I love you. I truly do. But that's a problem, Burnett. I love all three of you. I don't think I could accept this and choose...
Suddenly she was laughing.
You are a fool, aren't you, Randolthor?
Often, but what...
We are first sisters, Randolthor, Elaine and I. When we get to know her better, Min will join us. We three will share in all things.
First sisters? He should have suspected, following that odd bonding. He raised a hand to his head. We will share you, they had said to him. Leaving four bonded women to their pains was bad enough, but three bonded women who loved him? Light, he did not want to bring them pain.
They say you have changed, Alienda said.
So many have spoken of it in the short time since my return that almost I grow weary of hearing about you.
Well, your face may be calm, but your emotions are not. Is this so terrible a thing to consider?
Being with the three of us?
I want it, Alienda. I should hide myself because I do. But the pain...
You have embraced it, have you not?
It is not my pain, I fear. It is yours.
Are we so weak, then, that we cannot bear what you can?
That look in her eyes was unnerving.
Of course not, Rand said. But how can I hope for pain in those I love?
The pain is ours to accept, she said, raising her chin. Randolthor, your decision is simple, though you strive to make it difficult. Choose yes or no. Be warned, it is all three of us, or none of us. We will not let you come between us.
He hesitated. Then, feeling a complete lecher, he kissed her. Behind him, maidens he hadn't realized were watching began to yell louder insults, though he could now hear an incongruous joy to them. He pulled back from the kiss, then reached out, cupping the side of Avienda's face with his hand.
You're bloody fools. All three of you.
Then it is well. We are your equals. You should know that I am a wise one now.
Then perhaps we are not equals, Rand said, for I've only just begun to understand how little wisdom I possess.
Avienda sniffed.
Enough talk. You will bed me now.
Light, he said. A little forward, aren't you? Is that the Aiel way of doing things?
No, she said, blushing again. I am not very skilled with this.
You three decided this, didn't you? Which of you came to me?
She hesitated, then nodded. I'm never going to get to choose, am I? She shook her head. He laughed and pulled her close. She was stiff, initially, but then melted against him.
So, do I go fight them first? He nodded toward the maidens.
That is only for the wedding, if we decide you are worth marriage, fool man. And it would be our families, not members of our society. You really did ignore your lessons, didn't you?
He looked down at her. Well, I'm glad there's no fighting to do. I'm not sure how much time we have, and I was hoping to get some sleep tonight. Still, he trailed off at the look in her eyes.
I'm not getting any sleep. Am I?
She shook her head.
Ah, well, at least I don't have to worry about you freezing to death this time.
Yes, but it may happen that I die of boredom, Randolthor, if you do not stop rambling.
She took him by the arm and gently but firmly pulled him back into his tent. The calls of the maidens growing louder, more insulting and more exuberant, all at the same time.
I suspect the reason is some kind of Tarangreal, Pavara said. She crouched with Andral in the back room of one of the Black Tower's general storehouses, and she did not find the position terribly comfortable. The room smelled of dust, grain, and wood. Most buildings in the Black Tower were new, and this was no exception, the cedar boards still fresh. "You know of a Tarangreal that could prevent gateways?" Andral asked. "Not specifically, no," Pavara replied, shifting to a better position. "But it is generally accepted that what we know of Tarangreal comprises only the smallest portion of what was once known. There must be thousands of different types of Tarangreal, and if Taim is a dark friend, he has access to the Forsaken, who could likely explain to him the use and construction of things we can only dream about." "So we need to find this Tarangreal," Andral said. "Block it, or at least figure out how it functions." "And escape?" Pavara asked. "Haven't you already determined that leaving would be a poor choice?" "Well, yes," Andral admitted. She concentrated and could catch glimmers of what he was thinking. She'd heard that the warder bond allowed an empathic connection. This seemed deeper. He was... yes. He really wished he could make gateways. He felt disarmed without them. She concentrated and could catch glimmers of what he was thinking. She'd heard that the warder bond allowed an empathic connection. This seemed deeper. He was... yes. He really wished he could make gateways. He felt disarmed without them. "It's my talent," he said begrudgingly. He knew she'd sift out the reason eventually. "I can make gateways. At least I could." "Really? With your level of strength in the One Power?" "Or lack of it?" he asked. She could sense a little of what he was thinking. Though he accepted his weakness, he worried that it made him unfit to lead. A curious mix of self-confidence and self-consciousness. "Yes," he continued. "Traveling requires great strength in the One Power, but I can make large gateways. Before this all went wrong, the largest I ever made was a gateway 30 feet across." Pavara blinked. "Surely you're exaggerating." "I'd show you, if I could." He seemed completely honest. Either he was telling the truth, or his belief was due to his madness. She remained quiet, uncertain how to approach that. "It's all right," he said. "I know that there are things wrong with me, with most of us. You can ask the others about my gateways. There's a reason Koteran calls me Page Boy. It's because the only thing I'm good at is delivering people from one place to another." "That's a remarkable talent, Andral. I'm certain the Tower would love to study it. I wonder how many people were born with it but never knew because the weaves for traveling were unknown." "I'm not going to the White Tower, Pavara," he said, putting an emphasis on the white. She changed the topic. "You long for traveling, yet you don't want to leave the Black Tower. So what does this Tarangreal matter?"
"Gateways would be useful," Andral said.
He thought something, but she couldn't catch hold of it. A quick flash of images and impressions. "But if we're not going anywhere," she protested.
"You'd be surprised," he said, raising his head to peer out over the windowsill at the alleyway.
It was drizzling outside. The rain had finally let up. The sky was still dark, though. Dawn wouldn't come for a few hours yet.
"I've been experimenting, trying a few things I don't think anyone else has ever tried."
"I doubt they are things that haven't ever been tried," she said. The Forsaken had access to the knowledge of ages.
"You really think one might be involved here?"
"Why not?" she asked. "If you were preparing for the last battle and wanted to make certain your enemies couldn't resist you,
Would you let a crop of channelers train together? Teach one another and become strong? Yes, he said softly. I would. And then I'd steal them. Pavara closed her mouth. That was probably right. Talking of the Forsaken troubled Andral. She could feel his thoughts, clearer than before. This bond was unnatural. She needed to be rid of it. After that, she wouldn't mind having him properly bonded to her. I will not take responsibility for this situation, Pavara, Andral said, again looking out. You bonded me first. After you betrayed the trust I gave you by offering a circle. I didn't hurt you. What did you expect to happen? Wasn't the purpose of a circle to allow us to join our powers? This argument is pointless. You only say that because you're losing. He said it calmly, and he felt calm as well. She was coming to realize that Andral was a difficult man to rile. I say it because it's true, she said. Do you disagree? She felt his amusement. He saw how she took control of the conversation. And, beside his amusement, he actually seemed impressed. He was thinking that he needed to learn to do what she did. The inner door to the room creaked open, and Laish peered in. She was a white-haired woman, round and pleasant, an odd match for the surly Ashaman Canler to whom she was married. She nodded to Pavara, indicating that half an hour had passed, then shut the door. Canler had reportedly bonded the woman, making her some kind of, what, female warder? Everything was backward with these men. Pavara supposed she could see the reason for bonding one's spouse, if only so that each could have the comfort of knowing where the other was, but it felt wrong to use the bond in such a mundane way. This was a thing for Aes Sedai and warders, not wives and husbands. Andral regarded her, obviously trying to figure out what she was thinking, though these thoughts were complex enough to give him trouble. Such an odd man, this Andral Genhald. How did he so fully mix determination and diffidence, like two threads woven together? He did what needed to be done, all the while worrying that he shouldn't be the one doing it. I don't understand myself either, he said. He was also infuriating. How had he grown so good at understanding what she was thinking? She still had to fish to figure out his thoughts. Can you think that again? He asked. I didn't catch it. Idiot, Pavara muttered. Andral smiled, then peeked over the windowsill again. It's not time, Pavara said. You're sure? Yes, she said. And if you keep peeking, you might scare him off when he actually comes. Andral reluctantly crouched down again. Now, Pavara said, when he comes, you have to let me take the lead. We should link. No. She would not put herself in his hands again. Not after what had happened last time. She shivered, and Andral glanced at her. There are very good reasons, she said, for not linking. I don't mean to insult you, Andral, but your ability isn't great enough to make the trade worthwhile. Better that there be two of us. You must accept this. On a battlefield, which would you rather have? One soldier or two, with one being only slightly less skilled, that you can send on different tasks and duties? He thought about it, then sighed. All right, fine. You talk sense this time. I always talk sense, she said, rising. It's time. Be ready. The two of them moved to either side of the doorway that led out into the alley. It stood open a crack by intention, the sturdy lock on the outside left hanging as if someone had forgotten to close it. They waited silently, and Pavara began to worry that her calculations had been off. Andral would have a good laugh about that. And the door pushed open the rest of the way. Dobser poked his head in.
Lured by Evan's offhanded comment that he'd nicked a bottle of wine from the back room after finding that Leish had forgotten to lock the door. According to Andral, Dobser was a known drunkard, and Taim had beaten him senseless more than once for getting into the wine. She could feel Andral's reaction to the man. Sadness. Deep, crushing sadness. Dobser had the darkness behind his eyes. Pavara struck quickly, tying Dobser in air and slamming a shield into place between the unsuspecting man and the source. Andral hefted a cudgel, but it wasn't needed. Dobser grew wide-eyed as he was hoisted into the air. Pavara put her hands behind her back, regarding him critically. "Are you certain about this?" Andral asked softly. "Too late now, regardless," Pavara replied, tying off the weaves of air. The accounts seemed to agree. The more dedicated a person was to the light before being taken, the more dedicated they'll be to the shadow after falling. And so this man, who had always been rather lukewarm, should be easier to break, bribe, or convert than others. That was important, as Taim's lackeys would likely realize what had happened as soon as... "Dobser?" a voice asked. Two figures darkened the doorway. "Do you have the wine?" "No need to watch the front. The woman isn't..." Wellen, and another of Taim's favored, Leems, stood in the doorway. Pavara reacted immediately, throwing weaves at the two men while forming a thread of spirit. They rebuffed her attempts at shielding them. It was tough to get a shield between the source and a person holding the one power, but her gags snapped into place, stopping their yells. She felt air wrapping around her, a shield trying to come between her and the source. She lashed out with spirit, slicing down the weaves by guessing where they would be. Leems stumbled back, looking surprised as his weaves vanished. Pavara threw herself forward, weaving another shield and smashing it between him and the source as she slammed her body into him, throwing him back against the wall. The distraction worked, and her shield cut him off from the one power. She flung a second shield at Wellen, but he hit her with his own threads of air. They hurled her backward across the room. She wove air as she crashed into the wall, grunting. Her vision swam, but she kept hold of that single thread of air and by instinct, sweeping it forward, grabbed Wellen's foot as he tried to run out of the building. She felt the ground tremble from someone falling. He tripped, hadn't he? Dizzy, she couldn't see straight. She sat up, aching all over, but clung to the threads of air she'd woven as gags. Let those go and Taim's men would be able to scream. If they did that, she died. They all died. Or worse. She blinked the tears of pain from her eyes to find Andral standing over the two Ashaman, cudgel in his hand. He'd knocked them both out, it appeared, not trusting in shields he couldn't see. Good thing, too, as her second shield hadn't gotten into place. She set it now. Dobser still hung where she'd put him, his eyes wider now. Andral looked at Pavara. "Light," he said. "Pavara, that was incredible. You brought down two Ashaman, practically by yourself." She smiled in satisfaction and woozily took Andral's hand, letting him help her to her feet. "What did you think the Red Aja does with its time, Andral? Sit around and complain about men? We train to fight other channelers." She felt Andral's respect as he busied himself, pulling Wellen into the building and shutting the door, then checking at the windows to make certain they hadn't been seen. He drew the shades quickly, then channeled to make a light. Pavara took a breath, then raised a hand and steadied herself against the wall. Andral looked up sharply. "We need to take you to one of the others for healing." "I'll be fine," she said. "Just took a thump to the head, and it has the room shaking. It will wear off." "Let me see," Andral said, walking over, his light hovering beside him. Pavara allowed him to putter about for a moment, checking her eyes,
feeling her head for lumps. He moved his light closer to her eyes. "Does it hurt to look at this?" "Yes," she admitted, glancing away. "Nausea? Slight." He grunted, then took a handkerchief out of his pocket and poured some water on it from his flask. He adopted a look of concentration, and his light winked out. The handkerchief crackled softly, and when he handed it to her, it was frozen. "Hold this to the wound," he said. "Tell me if you start to feel drowsy. It could grow worse if you fall asleep." "Are you worried for me?" she asked, amused, doing as he said. "Just, what was it you told me earlier? Keeping watch over our assets." "I'm sure," she said, pressing the iced bandana to her head. "So you know field medicine as well?" "I apprenticed with a town's wise woman once," he said absently, as he knelt to bind the fallen men. Pavara was glad to release the weaves of air on them, though she did keep the shields up. "A wise woman took on a male apprentice?" "Not at first," Andral said. "It's a long story." "Excellent. A long story will keep me from falling asleep until the others come for us." Amarin and the others had been instructed to go and be seen, establishing an alibi for the group, in case Dobser's disappearance was noted. Andral eyed her, replacing his light. Then he shrugged, continuing his work. "It started when I lost a friend to the fevers during a silver pike run out of Mayenne. When I came back to the mainland, I started thinking that we could have saved Sayer if any of us had known what to do. So I went looking for someone who could teach me."
Chapter 4 Advantages to a Bond.
"And that was the end of it," Pavara said, sitting against the wall.
Andral could feel her emotions. They sat in the storeroom where they'd fought Taim's men, waiting for Imaran, who claimed he could make Dobser talk. Andral himself had little skill in interrogation. The scent of grain had changed to a rancid stench. It spoiled suddenly sometimes. Pavara had grown quiet, both outside and in, as she'd spoken of the murder of her family by longtime friends.
"I still hate them," she said. "I can think about my family without pain. But the Dark Friends, I hate them. At least I have some vengeance, as the Dark Ones certainly didn't defend them. They spent all their lives following him, hoping for a place in his new world, only to have the last battle come long after their deaths. I suppose the ones living now won't be any better off. Once we win the last battle, he will have their souls. I hope their punishment is lengthy." "You're so certain we will win?" Andral asked.
"Of course we will win. It's not a question, Andral. We can't afford to make it one."
He nodded. "You're right. Continue."
"There's no more to say. Odd to tell the story after all these years. For a long while I couldn't speak of it."
The room fell silent. Dobser hung in his bonds, facing the wall, his ears plugged by Pavara's weaves. The other two were still unconscious. Andral had hit them hard, and he intended to see that they didn't awaken any time soon. Pavara had shielded them, but she couldn't possibly maintain three shields at once if the men tried to break free. Aes Sedai usually used more than one sister to hold one man. Three would be impossible for any single channeler, strong or not. She could tie off those shields, but Taim had set the Ashaman at practicing how to escape a tied-off shield. Yes, best to make certain the other two didn't wake. Useful though it would be just to cut their throats, he didn't have the stomach for it. Instead, he sent a tiny thread of spirit and air to touch each of their eyelids. He had to use a single weave and a weak one, but he managed to touch all of their eyes. If the lids cracked a tiny bit, he'd know. That would have to be enough. Pavara was still thinking about her family. She had been telling the truth. She did hate the Dark Friends. All of them. It was a measured hate,
not out of control, but it was still strong after all of these years. He would not have suspected that in this woman who seemed so often to smile. He could sense that she hurt, and oddly, that she felt lonely.
"My father killed himself," Andril said, without really intending to.
She looked at him.
"My mother pretended it was an accident for years," Andril continued. "He did it out in the woods, leaped from a cliff. He'd sat down with her the night before and explained what he was going to do."
"She didn't try to stop him?" Pevara asked, aghast.
"No," Andril said. "Only a few years before she found the mother's last embrace. I was able to pry some answers out of her. She was frightened of him. That was shocking to me. He'd always been so gentle. What had changed in those last few years to make her fear him?"
Andril turned to Pevara.
"She said that he saw things in the shadows. That he'd started to go mad."
"Ah.
You asked me why I came to the Black Tower. You wanted to know why I asked to be tested. Well, this thing that I am, it answers a question for me. It tells me who my father was, and why he did what he felt he needed to do. I can see the signs now. Our business did too well. Father could find quarries of stone and veins of metal where nobody else could. Men hired him to find valuable deposits for them. He was the best, uncannily good. I could see it in him at the end, Pevara. I was only 10, but I remember. The fear in his eyes. I know that fear now."
He hesitated.
"My father jumped off that cliff to save his family's lives."
"I'm sorry," Pevara said.
"Knowing what I am, what he was, helps."
It had started raining again, fat drops hitting the window like pebbles. The door into the shop opened, and Imarin finally peered in. He saw Dobser hanging there and looked relieved. Then he saw the other two and started.
"What have you two done?"
"What needed to be done," Andril said, standing. "What took you so long?"
"I nearly started another confrontation with Kotaran," Imarin said, still staring at the two captive Ashaman. "I think our time is short, Andril. We didn't let them goad us, but Kotaran seemed annoyed, more so than normal. I don't think they're going to tolerate us much longer."
"Well, those captives put us on a countdown anyway," Pevara said, moving Dobser over to make room for Imarin.
"You really think you can make this man talk? I've tried interrogating Dark Friends before. They can be tough to crack."
"Ah," Imarin said.
"But this is not a Dark Friend. This is Dobser."
"I don't think it's really him,"
Andril said, studying the man floating in his bonds.
"I can't accept that someone can be made to serve the Dark One."
He could sense Pevara's disagreement. She really did think that was how it happened. Anyone who could channel could be turned, she'd explained. The old texts spoke of it. The idea made Andril want to sick up. Forcing someone to be evil? That shouldn't be possible. Fate moved people about, put them in terrible positions, cost them their lives, sometimes their sanity. But the choice to serve the Dark One or the Light? Surely that one choice could not be taken from a person. The shadow he saw behind Dobser's eyes was enough proof for Andril. The man he'd known was gone, killed. And something else, something evil, had been put into his body. A new soul. It had to be that.
"Whatever he is," Pevara said, "I'm still skeptical that you can force him to speak."
"The best persuasions," Imarin said, hands clasped behind his back, "are those that aren't forced. Pevara Sedai, if you would be so kind as to remove the weaves blocking his ears so that he can start to hear, but only remove them in the most minor way, as if the weave has been tied off and is failing. I want him to overhear what I'm about to say."
She complied.
At least Andril assumed she did. Being double-bonded didn't mean they could see one another's weaves. He could feel her anxiety, however. She was thinking of dark friends she'd interrogated, and was wishing for something. A tool she'd used against them?
"I do think we can hide at my estates," Imaran said in a haughty voice.
Andril blinked. The man held himself taller, more proudly, more authoritatively. His voice became powerful, dismissive. Just like that, he had become a nobleman.
"No one will think to look for us there," Imaran continued. "I will accept you as my associates, and the lesser among you, young Evan, for instance, can enter my employ as servants. If we play our hand correctly, we can build up a rival Black Tower."
"I don't know how wise that would be," Andril said, playing along.
"Silence," Imaran said. "I will ask your opinion when it is required." "I said I? The only way we will rival the White and Black Towers is if we create a place where male and female channelers work together. A gray tower, if you will."
"It is an interesting proposal."
"It is the only thing that makes sense," Imaran said, then turned to their captive. "He cannot hear what we say?"
"No," Vivara said.
"Release him, then. I would speak to him."
Vivara hesitantly did as instructed. Dobser dropped to the floor, barely catching himself. He stumbled for a moment, unsteady on his feet, then immediately glanced toward the exit. Imaran reached behind his back, pulled something from his belt, and tossed it to the floor. A small sack. It clinked as it hit.
"Master Dobser," Imaran said.
"What's this?"
Dobser asked, tentatively crouching down, taking the sack. He peeked into it, and his eyes widened noticeably.
"Payment,"
Imaran said. Dobser narrowed his eyes.
"To do what?"
"You mistake me, Master Dobser," Imaran said. "I'm not asking you to do anything. I'm paying you in apology. I sent Andril here to request your aid, and he seems to have overstepped the bounds of his instructions. I merely wish to speak with you. I did not intend to see you wrapped up in air and tormented."
Dobser glanced about himself, suspicious.
"Where'd you find money like this, Imaran? What makes you think you can start giving orders? You're a soldier."
He looked at the pouch's contents again.
"I see that we understand each other," Imaran said, smiling. "You'll maintain my front for me, then?"
Dobser frowned.
He looked at Wellen and Leems, lying unconscious on the floor.
"Yes," Imaran said. "That is going to be a problem, isn't it? You don't suppose we could just give Andril to Taim and blame him for this?"
"Andril?" Dobser said, snorting. "A page boy? Taking down to Ashaman? Nobody would believe it. Nobody."
"A valid point, Master Dobser," Imaran said.
"Just give him the Aes Sedai," Dobser said, jerking a finger toward her.
"Alas, I have need of her. A mess this is, a pure mess."
"Well," Dobser said, "maybe I could talk to the Mahale for you. You know, straighten it out."
"That would be much appreciated," Imaran said, taking a chair from beside the wall and setting it down, then placing another before it.
He sat, waving for Dobser to sit down.
"Andril, make yourself useful. Find something for Master Dobser and me to drink. Tea. You like sugar?"
"No," Dobser said. "Actually, I heard there was wine round here somewhere."
"Wine, Andril,"
Imaran said, snapping his fingers. Well, Andril thought, best to play the part. He bowed, shooting Dobser a calculated glare, then fetched some cups and wine from the storeroom. When he returned, Dobser and Imaran were chatting amicably.
"I understand," Imaran said. "I have had such trouble finding proper help inside the Black Tower. You see, the need to preserve my identity is imperative."
"I can see that, my lord," Dobser said.
Why, if anyone else knew a High Lord of Tyr was among our ranks, there'd be no end to the bootlicking. That I can tell you. And the Mihail, well, he wouldn't like someone with so much authority being here. No, not at all.
You see why I had to maintain my distance, Imaran explained, holding out a hand and accepting a cup of wine as Andral poured it. A High Lord of Tyr, Andral thought, amused. Dobser seemed to be drinking it in as he did strong liquor.
And we all thought you were fawning over Loghain because you were stupid, Dobser said.
Alas, the lot I've been given. Taim would see through me in a moment if I were to spend too much time around him. So I was forced to go with Loghain. He and that dragon fellow, both are obviously farmers and wouldn't recognize a high-born man.
I'll say, my lord, Dobser said.
I was suspicious.
As I thought, Imaran said, taking a sip of the wine. To prove it's not poisoned, he explained, before passing the cup to Dobser.
It's all right, my lord, Dobser said. I trust you.
He gulped down the wine.
If you can't trust a High Lord himself, who can you trust, right?
Quite right, Imaran said.
I can tell you this, Dobser said, holding out his cup and wagging it for Andral to refill. You'll need to find a better way of keeping away from Taim. Following Loghain won't work anymore.
Imaran took a long, contemplative sip from his cup of wine.
Taim has him. I see. I did guess it would be so. Wellen and the others showing up tells the tale.
Yeah,
Dobser said, letting Andral refill his cup again.
Loghain is a strong one, though. Takes a lot of work to turn a man like him. Willpower, you know? It will be a day or two to turn him. Anyway, you might as well come out to Taim, explain what you're up to. He'll understand, and he keeps saying men are more useful to him if he doesn't have to turn them. Don't know why. No choice but to turn Loghain, though. Awful process.
Dobser shivered.
I'll go and speak with him then, Master Dobser. Would you vouch for me by chance? I'll see you paid for the effort.
Sure, sure, Dobser said. Why not?
He downed his wine, then lurched to his feet.
He'll be checking on Loghain. Always does this time of night.
And that would be where, Imaran said.
The hidden rooms, Dobser said. In the foundations we're building. You know, the eastern section, where the collapse made all of that extra digging? That was no collapse, just an excuse for covering up extra work being done. And...
Dobser hesitated.
And that's enough, Pivara said, tying the man up in air again and stopping his ears.
She folded her arms, looking at Imaran.
I'm impressed.
Imaran spread his hands apart in a gesture of humility.
I have always had a talent for making men feel at ease. In truth, I didn't suggest picking Dobser because I thought he'd be easy to bribe. I picked him because of his, well, understated powers of cognitive expression.
Turning someone to the shadow doesn't make him any less stupid, Andral said. But if you could do this, why do we have to jump him in the first place?
It's a matter of controlling the situation, Andral, Imaran said. A man like Dobser mustn't be confronted in his element, surrounded by friends with more wits than he. We had to scare him, make him writhe, then offer him a way to wiggle out.
Imaran hesitated, glancing at Dobser.
Besides, I don't think we wanted to risk him going to Taim, which he very well might have done if I'd approached him in private without the threat of violence.
And now? Pivara asked.
Now, Andral said, we douse these three with something that will keep them sleeping until Beltane. We gather Nalam, Candler, Evan, and Jonath. We wait for Taim to finish his inspection of Loghain. We break in, rescue him, and seize the tower back from the shadow.
They stood in silence for a moment, the room lit only by the single flickering lamp. Rain sprayed the window.
Well, Pivara said, so long as it's not a difficult task you propose in Andral.
Rand opened his eyes to the dream, somewhat surprised to find that he had fallen asleep. Avienda had finally let him doze. In truth, she was probably letting herself doze as well. She'd seemed as tired as he had. More, perhaps. He climbed to his feet in the meadow of dead grass. He had been able to sense her concern not only through the bond, but in the way she had held him. Avienda was a fighter, a warrior, but even a warrior needed something to hold on to once in a while. Light knew that he did. He looked about. This didn't feel like Tel-Arun-Riad. Not completely. The dead field extended into the distance on all sides, presumably into infinity. This wasn't the true world of dreams. It was a dream shard, a world created by a powerful dreamer or dreamwalker. Rand began walking, feet crunching on dead leaves, though there were no trees. He could probably have sent himself back to his own dreams. Though he had never been as good as many of the Forsaken at walking dreams, he could manage that much. Curiosity drove him forward. I shouldn't be here, he thought. I set wards. How had he come to this place and who had created it? He had a suspicion. There was one person who had often made use of dream shards. Rand felt a presence nearby. He continued walking, not turning, but knew that someone was now walking beside him. Elan, Rand said. Luz Tharn. Elan still wore his newest body, the tall, handsome man who wore red and black. It dies, and the dust will soon rule. The dust, then nothing. How did you pass my wards? I don't know, Moradin said. I knew that if I created this place, you would join me in it. You can't keep away from me. The pattern won't allow it. We are drawn together, you and I, time after time after time. Two ships moored on the same beach, beating against one another with each new tide. Poetic, Rand said. You've finally let Mieren off her leash, I've seen. Moradin stopped, and Rand paused, looking at him. The man's rage seemed to come off him in waves of heat. She came to you, Moradin demanded. Rand said nothing. Do not pretend that you knew she still lived. You didn't know. You couldn't have known. Rand kept still. His emotions regarding Lanfear, or whatever she called herself now, were complicated. Luz Tharn had despised her, but Rand had known her primarily as Selene, and had been fond of her, until at least she tried to kill Egwene and Avienda. Thinking of her made him think of Moraine, made him hope for things he shouldn't hope for. If Lanfear still lives, might Moraine as well? He faced Moradin with calm confidence. Loosing her is pointless now, Rand said. She no longer holds any power over me. Yes, Moradin said. I believe you. She does not. But I do think she still harbors something of a grievance with the woman you chose. What is her name again? The one who calls herself Aiel, but carries weapons? Rand did not rise to the attempt to rile him. Mieren hates you now, anyway, Moradin continued. I think she blames you for what happened to her. You should call her Sindane. She has been forbidden to use the name she took upon herself. Sindane, Rand said, trying out the word. Last chance. Your master has gained humor, I see. It was not meant to be humorous, Moradin said. No, I suppose that it was not. Rand looked at the endless landscape of dead grass and leaves. It is hard to think that I was so afraid of you during those early days.
Did you invade my dreams then, or bring me into one of these dream shards? I was never able to figure it out. Moradin said nothing. I remember one time, Rand said, sitting up by the fire, surrounded by nightmares that felt like Talayrunriad. You would not have been able to pull someone fully into the world of dreams, yet I'm no dreamwalker, able to enter on my own. Moradin, like many of the Forsaken, had usually entered Talayrunriad in the flesh, which was dangerous. Some said that entering in the flesh was an evil thing, that it lost you a part of your humanity. It also made you more powerful. Moradin gave no clue as to what had happened on that night. Rand remembered those days faintly, traveling toward Tyr. He remembered visions in the night, visions of his friends or family that would try to kill him. Moradin, Ishamael, had been pulling him against his will into dreams intersecting Talayrunriad.
You were mad during those days, Rand said softly, looking into Moradin's eyes. He could almost see the fires burning there. You're still mad, aren't you? You just have it contained. No one could serve him without being at least a little mad.
Moradin stepped forward.
Taunt as you wish, Lothsthern. The ending dawns. All will be given to the great suffocation of the shadow to be stretched, ripped, strangled.
Rand took a step forward as well, right up to Moradin. They were the same height.
You hate yourself, Rand whispered. I can feel it in you, Elon. Once you served him for power, now you do it because his victory and an end to all things is the only release you'll ever know. You'd rather not exist than continue to be you.